Hey, this is Ed Fallon with you folks, and Jeffrey Weiss joining me in the studio today. We have a lot to talk about. The situation in Iran is, evolving by the minute. But especially given the way the administration wants to control the narrative and the extent to which much of the legacy media seems to want to fall in line, I think it's really important that we, in independent sources of news, have this conversation. I can't think of a better person to have that conversation with than Jeffrey. Jeffrey's a professor of poli-sci at DMAC, Des Moines Area Community College. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Ed.
So you must be, like a lot of us, pretty disturbed, but maybe not surprised at what happened in Iran this past week.
Yeah. Well, I think the most important thing to state from the outset is that the UN Charter is clear on when a country can use force against another, and a country can only use force if they have a UN Security Council resolution, or A can attack B if first B attacks A. So this was an unprovoked, illegal war of aggression. It is what the Germans were convicted for during World War II. It's not often stated, but the Germans were not convicted of genocide in 1945. They were convicted of a supreme international crime, which is called a war of aggression. They were on trial with the jurisprudence of the United States of America, the United Kingdom, the winners of World War II. So that's the most important thing, I think, to note from the outset.
But how is this any different than other wars the U.S. has initiated?
It's not that much different. It's a little bit different that it is with Israel, that it's, two countries at the same time, two countries that have nuclear weapons.
Collaborating, right.
Yeah, Israel has nuclear weapons and the United States has nuclear weapons. Attacking a country that its military budget is about $23 billion a year. Compare that to about, more than a trillion. The United States spends that in about 2 weeks. And so they're attacking a country of 90 million people. You know, this isn't attacking, 5.5 million Palestinians. This is attacking a country of 90 million people. The Persian peoples, who are 65% of that population, have a millennia of history, biblical history, et cetera.
Pre-biblical history.
Absolutely. And so this is with the outset and aim of getting the people within that country to rise up and overthrow the government, which is highly unlikely for a number of reasons.
Well, I mean, the Iranian people were trying. A lot of Iranians are really dissatisfied with the religious minority that control the country's government.
Yeah. Most Iranians.
Am I right to say religious minority?
No. Most Iranians were not on the streets because they want to overthrow their government. Most of them were on the streets because, as the U.S. Secretary of Treasury stated quite openly, that the United States has squeezed their economy so much and that the sanctions are put in forth so that people will suffer so much economically with hyperinflation and other things that they will go to the streets. Mm. Yeah, it is, of course, true that there is dissent against Iran is the only theocratic republic of the world. I mean, they're...
What, Afghanistan?
No, they don't have that label.
Israel?
Well, I suppose you could make that argument, but formally Iran truly is. I mean, it's part of its government, the parliament and president is elected, modeled after de Gaulle's Fifth Republic of France, and then the other part is a theocracy, which is sort of has the preeminent check and balance in their system. And the Iranian Revolution, 1979, it still has legitimacy amongst the population. It has its problems, of course. It isn't a situation that a country is sort of teetering on the edge and they're going to be pushed over the edge. And so that the likelihood that especially the minority population, the 35% of minorities, the Turks, the Arabs, et cetera, are going to get on the streets. And in particular, also when one of the first things that you do is you bomb a girls' school in southern Iran, in Manab, and you kill maybe 100 second graders.
And let me ask about that. The Iranian, the official media of Iran, I forget what it's called, is claiming that that's what happened. Has that, and that may very well be the case, but has that been independently verified?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, it's
has
been,
it been?
It's been reported by pretty much everywhere in terms of international news. Yeah,
and they're basing that
photos and et cetera. Sure, okay.
And it's terrible. It's actually horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had some of my right wing audience saying that no, you know, there's no evidence that it was actually a U.S. or Israeli missile that bombed that school.
Okay.
It could have been.
Well, yeah, it won't take them very long to find if they search beyond Fox News or CNN or it won't take them very long to. Yeah, I mean we're in some ways in some. I don't know. I don't want to really call it new terrain because usually when war takes place, it becomes sort of NPR becomes National Pentagon Radio and it becomes U.S. officials said news, you know, where it's just quoting U.S. officials. So if people go beyond what U.S. officials are saying, they can even go to The Guardian. I mean, they can go to a lot of European media and they can find a lot of different sources for what's happening.
Well, The Guardian is basing its assessment of what happened to that schoolhouse on the official report from Iran.
Well, yeah.
And the U.S., as far as I know, the U.S. has no official report right now.
Yeah, right now, the war just started, and I think we're up to more than 600 civilian casualties right away. I mean, you have a couple of countries that really have a long history of civilian casualties, of sort of, you know, burning the village in order to save it. Mm-hmm. So I think that if this war continues, you know, you're bombing highly populated centers of 90 million people. We're gonna see a lot more suffering, which isn't gonna be good for the Iranians, the Persians. Not gonna be good for the Israelis. Not gonna be good for the Americans.
And there's a significant component of certainly I think a significant majority of the Democratic base that is anti-intervention. Even though we've had Democratic presidents and Congresses that have been pretty pro-intervention in the past as well. But, certainly not a majority, but a significant minority of Republican voters came to the last election, the Trump election, voting for Trump, because of his stated non-interventionist policies, it should be clear to everybody right now that was a total lie.
Yeah.
He's not a non-interventionist president. He's all over the place.
Yeah, he's not threatening Cuba. Yeah,
not threatening Cuba.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get back to Greenland at some point. You know, polling. Let me share this with you. This is from G. Elliott Morris. He's sharing a YouGov snap poll. This is Saturday, the day of the strikes, and it found that 34% of Americans approve of U.S. attacks on Iran. 44% disapproved. 22% were unsure. So that's some, normally when the U.S. goes into one of these adventurous wars, wars of aggression, it has a much higher percentage of the public that are supportive.
Yeah, that's
34% support what we're doing.
True. Yeah, I mean, the United States public has, over the years, become much more anti-war when you look at public opinion polls. And because this took place with zero provocation, then, zero basis, at that point, there isn't even a buildup of lies that we're used to, like weapons of mass destruction. So, in this case, it was unprovoked. And so it's even more so. I think also because of the way that people are living paycheck to paycheck, oftentimes in the United States, war is a much, much harder sell. I mean, but, to be honest with you, most of the things that this administration and the last administration did are deeply unpopular. I mean, we don't have a functioning democracy right now. We're actually post-constitution right now, living under executive decree for the most part. So, our own republic. I mean, for years, a lot of people around the world have hated the American empire, but they've liked the American republic. And now it's for many, it's neither.
Yeah. Hey, I want to share four publications' take on the attacks and get your response to each of them. First is the New York Times. This is from a story on March 2nd. The war against Iran is getting bigger and deadlier. American and Israeli strikes have pummeled Iran on land and at sea. Iran's retaliatory drones and missiles flew toward targets across the Middle East, and Israel is now striking Lebanon. That's from the New York Times, and I guess the implication there is this is already very quickly getting big. And to what is the potential for this to get incredibly out of control?
I don't know incredibly out of control, because Iran never wanted a war with Israel and the United States. They never wanted it because militarily they can't even think about competing. And so I don't see it escalating to something too severe, because Iran is and will be for the most part fighting by themselves. Now, does that mean that Saudi Arabia won't get involved? No. Of course, the British have a long history of imperialism in Iran, including the United States and Israel, overthrowing Iran's democratically elected government and parliament in 1953, which is important to note, otherwise we wouldn't even be here talking about this. And having said that, I don't see it just because Iran doesn't have,
so the,
nobody wants to take on the United States and Israel.
I look at it, I get my news from all kinds of places. One is The Lever. The Lever writes, the case for invading Iraq was based on lies. The Trump administration's case for war with Iran hardly exists at all. And that's basically
fair.
What you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't even attempt to come up with a justification for the most part.
I mean, I remember, I recall reading that, Trump tried to roll out the, we're concerned about Iran's nuclear buildup, but that's not verified by independent agencies that monitor nuclear activity.
Well, no, and of course, we had a deal, the JCPOA, in 2016. It was working extremely well, and Iran was trying to, and it was torn up by the administration. So, even beyond that, I mean, there were people in Iran who still thought they should go along with that deal, even though the U.S. tore it up and conformed to it with the other members of the Security Council and Germany. But the United States thwarted that. So, so really, the other thing is Khamenei, who was 86 years old and had cancer and probably would have preferred to be martyred than die in a hospital bed.
Well, he got his wish.
And he also is respected by the Iranians because he chose to remain in his office for days, and people were telling him, you need to shelter. He said, well, let's let the 90 million people shelter, and then if there's room for me, I'll shelter. So, you have 49 days of mourning, but it's pretty clear that the people who will probably come after Khamenei, and you can see this already, are going to be far more hardline than he was, and he was a supreme leader who said publicly over and over that Iran did not and should not obtain a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, let me share something that Bill McKibben wrote. Iran has the world's second largest reserves of natural gas and the third biggest pool of oil, trailing only Saudi Arabia and Venezuela. As oil executives helpfully explained to Politico last month, they are generously prepared to be a, quote, stabilizing force in Iran should the regime fall. Indeed, they'd rather do it there than in Venezuela because, as executives explained, Iran's oil industry, despite being ravaged by years of U.S. sanctions, is still considered to be structurally sound, unlike that of Venezuela's.
Yeah.
How central to the unstated rationale behind the attacks on Iran is American interest in gaining control of Iran's oil?
Yeah. We don't really know. And I mean, we can only speculate, and maybe books will be written if there are books to write 30 or 40 or 50 years from now or 100 years from now about the many reasons for it. I mean, you could have the Epstein class, bombing schoolgirls, as one of the first acts of this war, as maybe one of the chapters too. You can have, I mean, there's a lot of speculation as to why. And really, if the stated goal is to overthrow the Iranian government and get the people to get in the streets and to do that, there doesn't seem to be much of a way forward for that. I mean, history is unpredictable, but if that's the case and that is the end goal, then this could go on for a long, long time.
But I mean, what happened in Venezuela? We captured Maduro, and then put the second in charge in charge of the government. We handed the government to his vice president, meaning there was no regime change.
Yeah.
And here in Iran, that's likely as well. It's not going to be a regime change. Yeah. It's going to be handing over the reins to someone else who will keep the existing government going, but will also be willing to work with the U.S. on its economic interests.
Yeah, in a country of 90 million people that has solid government, economic, other institutions, social institutions, it doesn't seem likely. Like I said, you're attacking a country of 90 million. You are attacking people who, you know, this isn't Venezuela. This isn't, a few million Palestinians. And so, you know, I mean, there's some speculation that maybe, you know, Israel could get what it wants by dropping a nuclear bomb on Iran. You know, it's you know, once again, burning the village in order to save it. And we hope that cooler heads prevail as time goes on. It's just that there doesn't seem to be, you know, the Shah lives in Maryland, you know, the ancestor of the Shah, and doesn't have any institutional legitimacy within Iran. So there doesn't appear to be a way forward here.
Hey, I got to take a short break. Jeffrey Weiss with me, folks.